Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 29, for February 14th, 2010. The buzz is on. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. Make your next meeting a GoToMeeting instead. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/twig. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show that covers all the Google sphere. And boy, there's a lot of activity in the Google sphere right now. Starting off today, Jeff Jarvis from New York City. He is the man at BuzzMachine.com. Hi, Jeff.
Hey there.
And I welcome. Gina's not with us today. I'm sorry to say her grandfather passed away. She's at his funeral, and I know she would love to be here. But we wish her the best and condolences. And
let's note it takes two people to replace Gina.
It does. And I flashed you with one of them, which is, of course, a face you might recognize from, I don't know, from if you're on Google Buzz, for instance, Yuri Engström, who I've known for some time, one of the founders of Jaiku. And now an employee at Google. He's based in Helsinki. Hello, Yuri.
Here we go.
Is it Helsinki that you're? I know you're in Finland. I assumed Helsinki.
That's right. I recently moved back here from San Francisco.
Yay! Also joining us, another former Googler who's now at British Telecom at Ribbit.com. Kevin Marks, also a very active buzzer.
Hi there.
Good to see you.
Is it buzzer or buzzard?
You know, this is our chance to create all of those terms afresh and anew, because I don't think anybody's done anything yet.
I guess a single post is a bzzzt.
Go ahead, Kevin.
We did a post called Never Mind the Buzzcocks, which is a British TV show, which is very amusing.
Someone's already used the headline, yeah.
Can I not be a buzzcock? I would prefer not to. So Google surprised us all with this announcement of Buzz, was it Wednesday? Boom, there it is. And by the way, boom, the early adopters just jumped on the platform and it took off, and it's huge. Now, I know Kevin and Yuri must have known this was coming, because Kevin, you were working on Open Social and Google Profiles when you were at Google, and this must have been in the works even then.
Yeah, it builds on a lot of infrastructure that was being put into place then.
Right.
I think Yuri was more closely involved with Buzz itself than I was.
This is not your product, is it, Yuri?
Well, I don't think you could call it my product. It's definitely the current product manager's product, who's Todd Jackson over on the Gmail team.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about Buzz,
so it was under Gmail. That's interesting.
Right. That said, there's a lot of elements that Buzz uses that I was involved with, such as Google Profiles and activity streams.
It reminds me a lot of Jaiku, just on the face of it. And I was a big Jaiku, as you know, a big Jaiku fan, and I was very hopeful that Jaiku could replace Twitter. Never did. But Google obviously saw some value in it and acquired Jaiku, and you and Petri, it must have been 3 years ago now.
Yeah, it's about 2.5 years.
2.5 years. And you've been working not on Buzz, but on location-based stuff, things like that?
Well, I suppose, I'm treading a line here, I guess, because I definitely wouldn't want to take credit for all the awesome work that the Buzz team's been putting together. But I worked on, I suppose you could call it a precursor of Buzz, a project that became known as Google Buzz.
Oh,
back when I was product managing it, didn't really have a name yet. We were just calling it Google Social.
Oh, interesting. Is there any Jaiku code in this?
No, there's no Jaiku code in Buzz as far as I'm aware of.
Yeah. Oh, Jaiku, should say for those who don't know, was open sourced by Google. It's available in Google Code. You can use the source yourself. And still runs. It's still out there. And it's still a community.
That's right. We open sourced the code base as something called Jaiku Engine. On Google App Engine.
I'm sorry, not Google Code. App Engine, right.
Right.
So How would you describe Buzz, Yuri?
Well, I think it's the way I look at it is it's like an arc stone that sort of connects together a lot of the social services that Google has in one place, and not just Google, but from all over the web, as is obvious. And for instance, Google Profiles, things like Google Latitude, you know, this has emerged as sort of like a project that where incremental parts of it have been shipped over the last couple of years. And really, we didn't have that central place until Buzz shipped inside of Gmail. So for me, it was kind of like the completion of a fairly long road that started for me with the acquisition of Jaiku. And for some people, it started much earlier.
Right. And Kevin, what would you say your input is into this, and how would you characterize what has emerged?
Well, I go along with Yuri there. I think the exciting thing about Buzz for me is that they've taken a bunch of these open standards that we've been working on collectively as a part of the open web over the last few years and put them into a big mainstream product like Gmail. And coupled that in fairly well. That's a striking achievement.
Yes.
And the commentary that's come out saying that they're going to be maintaining this as using the open standards like Activity Streams, PubSub, Hubbub, XFN, all the standards that you know I've been going around going yay about for a while is really important, because in some ways it's not something that new. If you actually look at ClickSet or Superfeeder or Status.net, there's a whole bunch of sites that have been building on this stuff already.
Right.
But for Google to take those standards and put it bang into Gmail is a huge thing. I mean, in some ways, a lot of this was already there in Google Reader. If the way Google Reader handles sharing and following and stuff like that was there, but the number of people who use Google Reader is orders of magnitude less than the number of people who use Gmail. So bringing it into Gmail is a sort of major achievement, and it suddenly raises the level of interest in supporting these open standards quite high, which is very good.
Google kind of just sprang it on everybody. It was suddenly you go in your Gmail and it says, "Hey, would you want to try Buzz?"
and even if you say no, it still shows up. Yeah,
is that true? Even if you say no,
you still got the little buzz.
It's an option. Yeah, I went begging to get it, and I didn't have to beg. There it was.
Yeah, I didn't get it right away, and I was very disheartened. But I got it soon enough. The next day, of course, there's been a lot of sound and fury around this. First of all, because it was there, some people complained about the privacy issues raised by it. One of the things that, and I'd love to get Yuri and Kevin to talk about what's going on here, but what it looks like is it's looking at who you Gmail and Gtalk the most and adding them automatically. I had, when I got in there, 41 people I was following. And the default is that those followers are visible out of the box. And that caused a number of people some concern about privacy. I don't know if that's changed yet, but I'm sure that Google plans to make that process a little bit different.
Yeah. I mean, that's the concerns that have been raised are fairly significant. And the thing, what they did was they've taken what all the social networks do, which is you sign up, you give them your email address, you give them your address book, it tries to find all your friends and joins you up. And you know, that's the onboarding process for Twitter and Facebook, right, and everything. Except the thing is, they compressed it all into one button, and they already have your email address book, so it's there. And they signed you up without asking you first. So basically, they took the whole chain of going on board. I mean, I think of the sites that do that, I think FriendFeed does that the smoothest and nicest. A lot of the others still do terrible things like ask you for your password and log in as you.
Oh, yeah.
But what they did with Google Buzz was basically do that automatically. And the problem is that by choosing your most emailed and most chatted to people as your default set of followers, that's problematic because those aren't necessarily the same set of people. And we had the shocking example of the woman whose ex-husband was suddenly, abusive ex-husband was suddenly showing up as a follower. And some, there are other cases there where that's not what you want. And then the second piece of that is that it wasn't clear that you were publishing that. Now, Twitter has a public social graph. Facebook has a semi-public social graph, and MySpace has a fully public social graph as well. So a lot of the sites already have this, but again, there's been some assumption of that's what's going on when you go there, whereas this was creating one in a place that you assume was private and not making it clear that that's what it was doing. that suddenly, you know, made it disturbing. I think the particular case that the woman was complaining about was that she'd also been using Google Reader with the assumption that was private, and actually that was then brought into this as well. So she had, it was the sort of crossing of the compartment from Gmail, which was seen as a private space where only she knew who she was talking to, and Reader, which she saw as a separate private space. She had a small separate set of people, and suddenly those two streams merged together.
Dana Boyd today also blogged about lawyers. Beware, because what you're following, it can now be visible. Kevin,
I also had a conversation with
hindsight's easy, but it seems in hindsight that this was fairly obvious. I blogged today that I wonder if it wasn't kind of a beta too soon, that if there had been more use by the public rather than just Google employees, maybe they would have seen this?
I think that's possible. I think part of the problem is that they were using it internally. So that is a very different test environment, because you've got a homogenous set of people, or homophilous set of people, if you like, who are all already have an email culture, and also tend to have, particularly for Googlers, and I think Facebook has this problem too, tend to be people whose work and friends and something are all clustered together. And obviously have a sort of much smaller set of people with abusive ex-partners, marginalized people, and so on. So they didn't always see those issues.
Right.
The other thing is that in the test environment they were running it internally, so only people inside Google could see it. So you already had
a public issue then. Yeah.
There was no public issue, but there was also no... some of the other issues that we'll get to later, like suddenly we've got millions of comments from, you know, you accidentally touch a Scoble post and your inbox is destroyed for days.
I was getting to that.
that problem wouldn't show up internally too.
Right.
So
the publicness, I think, and the scale were both not there in the testing they had. But I also see the other problem is if they try to release it as a more of the Google way, which is a beta, I'm surprised I don't see the word beta, or you would say, Kevin, beta anywhere near it. Which is unusual for Google, but I guess part of the problem is that it's a critical mass issue. If all you have is 100 users outside, then you can't really, you can't really use it very well.
I think the other way of thinking of it is, if you think about Google Reader as the testbed for this, was they basically, you know, Reader, like 18 months ago or so, did something similar. They put the automatic friends and following in to let you discover the shared items and did all that stuff. There was some fuss about it then for the similar reasons. And they iterated on that for a while and got that working there. So I suspect they may have thought they'd got some of the flaws out through that, because that was, you know, but it is, you know, a lot smaller and a lot more different set of uses.
Yuri, were you surprised by these issues?
Well, to a degree, yeah. But to another degree, I wasn't. It was obviously a very, one could argue, a brave choice from Google, who is, I think, for Google, the key is, as a brand, to retain people's trust, because they're getting pretty big. And I think that's probably the single, you know, largest threat to Google, is that people would really, on a large scale, lose their trust in the brand. And I think this was one of those cases where, you know, a call had to be made. And obviously they chose to go for the alternative that they chose. Now, I think on a broader scope, though, we're going to see this. This is probably not the last time we're going to encounter something like this, because what's happening, if you look at, like, you know, Kevin was just talking about PubSubHub and, you know, all these open standards that are being built, which is, I think, probably the most important thing about Buzz in the long run. You know, that's all about kind of bringing together these social networks that we used to treating as disparate, you know, as separate social objects that we have different branded communities for, where we interact with different groups of people. And, you know, so on the kind of broader scale of what I think we're, you know, just kind of experiencing here, and what we're going to have to come to terms with, is, you know, this stuff happening more. And honestly, I don't think it's a bad thing for people to kind of be exposed to the issues this way, and for us to be having this conversation right now, because, you know, it's kind of necessary for us to shift, I believe, from this world of, you know, the siloed social networks into a world where data can flow freely.
Absolutely agree with that. I completely agree with that. But as a PR issue for the company that's having some some issues that way, at least in media. And this privacy bug, which I think is overused. I mean, you live in a country where I believe you can look up your neighbor's income, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So we have very different standards. I wrote this week about the what I call the German privacy paradox.
I loved that.
They're private about everything, except as I learned in the sauna, they're private parts.
Okay. And Kevin wrote about that too. I thought it was very. I don't know why, but wasn't
so. So we all have different attitudes toward privacy, but it is an issue with Google now, and I wonder in part why they didn't even slap the beta logo, you know, label on it, just to be able to hang behind that as a caveat to say, oh, you know, caveat emptor.
I don't think that would have really made a difference. I don't think the beta logo would have prevented the tragedy of, you know, luckily, as far as I'm aware, you know, so far nobody's been hurt in a really bad way. You know, we have these, hopefully, some narrow misses. But, you know, that's kind of what I was saying about, like, Google being brave about this is, you know, they've kind of stuck their neck out and done this. And now we're having this conversation and kind of risked their brand. And I don't think it was completely unknowingly that this decision was done. You know, I agree with Kevin. I don't think anybody could, you know, really anticipate it coming this way because of the way it was tested. And I do agree with, you know, the idea that, you know, maybe possibly more, you know, open testing could have led to a different result. But on the other hand, you know, we've kind of moved forward pretty quickly. And if this passes in a positive way and people kind of, you know, start to understand that they need to pay more attention to this. Also, I'm talking about service builders here who may in the future be aggregating more services, then I think, you know, in the long run, possibly this was a good thing.
Now, there were, of course, other complaints, as you mentioned, there are complaints about what it's done to my Gmail. And I think a number of people said, boy, I almost want to create a separate Gmail account for Buzz because Gmail has suddenly become more about Buzz than it is about mail.
Well, that's what I was saying in the thing I wrote about. I think the issue is that they're privileging replies over followings, which is the opposite of Twitter. The way that Twitter works is by default, you see the stuff from your following, you have to click the mentions button to see replies. Whereas what they've done with Buzz is that if someone replies to you, that goes in your main inbox, not just in the Buzz tab. So suddenly anyone who replies to you can stick stuff in your inbox. And anyone who adds you sticks that in your inbox too. So in fact, it's like the inverse, it's where the mentions tab is stronger than the main thing. The other thing they do is they bring the whole thread in, which means that if I at reply to Leo, then suddenly anytime anyone of the thousands of people watching Leo responds to that, that pops to the top of my inbox. So it sits there, you know, in my main Gmail inbox poking away. So I suspect that was part of the problem that they missed that. I suspect they missed that internally because they didn't have people who were, had that much attention to there. Though somebody said, I think when Larry Page said something that had that effect inside Google. But the problem is that then the people's first view of it in many cases will be they'll see one of these things. They'll see somebody's app replied to it. They'll see some stuff like that, and they're sort of prioritizing the reply over the following. So that combined with not choosing the following makes it very, very odd. And the feel of it, the sort of the thing that's comfortable about Twitter and Facebook is that you've chosen whom you're following. So you see these little messages from people with faces next to them that you know, and that's comfortable, and you get sort of comfortable with that and understand who's saying it and so on. Whereas with this, the first thing you may see is one of these replies, just the name for someone you don't know, and it feels like somebody's thrown a YouTube comments thread into your inbox.
Right.
It's like the opposite social affect. So that I think that part of it is a strong misstep.
Because it's adding more noise when it's supposed to try to filter the noise for you. How would you fix that?
Well, there's an easy way an easy fix to that, Jeff, which is, you know, I'm sure anybody who's had to toy around with designing systems like these will recognize immediately, which is that you, for instance, limit the replies that float up to the top to only replies from people who are also your contacts. Does that make sense? So not everyone's reply causes the post to float up to the top. Only if it's someone you know, or possibly a one degree away.
Can you do that? Does Google have to? Can I do that?
Yeah, Google has to do that.
Google has to do that. Yeah. There's the short term fix, which Lifehacker published and has been buzzed about 1,000 times, and I'm sure anybody who's interested has found it, which is to create a filter on the label colon Buzz. and then just skip the inbox with anything that comes from Buzz. And so I did that, and I'm completely content with the fact that I have now this massive Buzz folder.
That's one issue. The other issue is in using Buzz itself. You've got a lot of chatter.
Right.
I mean, just right. Leo, you put up the post.
Leo, you're used to that, right? You're used to having huge replies.
This is my life, so that I didn't notice life. It.
But the challenge is if some random person replies to you now, they get your life.
Right.
They get all the stuff that you used to fed into
welcome
your
to my life.
Just your post from how many minutes ago? 5:30, so 11 minutes ago. If you look at the Eurozone Buzz about saying, gee, we're talking Buzz, the rat-a-tat-a-tat is incredible.
I love it. I love the real time of it. I love these things coming in. I love the conversation.
Yeah, you're a server killer. You like bringing all this stuff in, I know. But.
Well, and I love the conversation. And see, one of the things that Twitter has become rapidly is a broadcast medium and with some very poor conversation tools. And that's what I always liked about Jaiku the best, is that the focus was on the conversation. But they just simply need some tools. I remember, Yuri, when I talked to you about Jaiku, one of the first things I said is I want to be a way to collapse threads.
And that's right.
It's just something you need. It's an easy thing to implement. I think the question that immediately for me came to mind is, I knew it was beta. It's obviously beta. Is what kind of commitment Google has to this? We've seen Google throw stuff up and just leave it there and let it die a sad and neglected death.
Side wikis,
good example. If, on the other hand, Google has a strong commitment to this platform and responds to quickly, I don't know, how many developers are working on this? Is it one guy or is it a team? If they respond quickly to requests from users, this could very rapidly turn into the best platform on the net.
Listen, Leo, everyone who's, I think, even remotely involved with social stuff at Google is right now paying a lot of attention to this product. A lot of attention. That's my belief. So I would be very surprised if this was left to, you know, just kind of rot away on the sidelines.
So it's a high priority for Google. It ought to be. I mean, it's in Gmail. You put it in your a huge product for you.
It's more than that, I think, Leo, is that I've long said that there are three wars Google has not won. The war for the social web, the live web, and the local web. And Buzz hits all three battlefields square on, right? I've been accused of saying too often here, quoting Marissa Meyer, talking about the hyper-personal news stream and algorithms that will help you prioritize your stream. In Buzz, I see the beginnings of that. The ability to get to the annotated world of adding very easily, even through your voice, annotations about every damn restaurant there is, enriching maps and place pages and local advertising opportunities is huge.
I love the inclusion of location right in it.
I think it's gigantic. The notion that we move to the personalized web from the one-size-fits-all SEO web in how Google's going to learn more about us and give us more. The fact that it uses voice. The fact that it's finally in a live, streamy web rather than just a page-based web. The opportunities here are profound, I think, for Google. So if they let this drop, I think they're doing more than letting a product drop. They're
giving
showing
up.
That they don't have a strategy for some things that I think are critical to their growth.
109. Go ahead.
I think this you know what I was saying before. This is an illustration of what happens when you combine a lot of infrastructure that's being built gradually over time.
It crystallizes stuff.
Was a huge effort to move that from being a Gmail specific thing to being a Google wide resource and something that the rest of the world can use too. That's in there. It's not very well expressed necessarily yet, but that's part of this. The thing that Yuri highlighted in his post earlier this week about being able to send messages to subgroups of people within this.
That's so cool.
There.
Yep.
That works nicely, but unfortunately, it's a little decoupled. You have to go and create a contact group, and the contact group doesn't show your followers. So there's still a bit of a disconnect in there, but the pieces are starting to be there. The fact that it's coupled up with activity streams of PubSub Hubbub, which means that it will propagate stuff out as they're posted to other sites, and they can be updated in real time. And there are already two or three sites doing that, and vice versa. Stuff can be fed in rapidly as well without the delays that you're seeing now at the moment. Buzz is polling Twitter, and there are delays there, but the things that are set up with PubSub Hubbub come in rapidly. So there's a lot of sort of infrastructure and plumbing that's built on open standards there. And I've seen a strong commitment from a lot of Googlers, DeWitt Clinton, Chris Messina, Joe Spa, and others saying the point of this for us is to implement these open standards well and not be the center of your web, but be a place where people can see this and that they can propagate wherever it needs to go. So
what about the other way, Kevin? Why can't I use Buzz as an authoring tool for Twitter now? Is there a political reason or you think?
Because Twitter expects you to call Twitter's API and Buzz is supporting an open standard. So there's a slight political reason. The other thing is that you'd have to degrade the Buzzes to get them into Twitter. It'd be like, you know, when you friend feed into Twitter, you get the first 15 words and then a link. It'd have to be something like that because Twitter doesn't have the space to put in
all my friend Facebook updates are now degraded to Twitter length, then it's okay. I would use Buzz as my authoring tool for social, you know, if I could, and let the best one win.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's a bit, you know, here we see the beta product. It's clearly a feature that, you know, everyone is expecting Google to build into Buzz.
Okay.
My belief is just, you know, they just had to cut out some features in order to get this thing shipped. That's my hunch. And by the way, I am with the lead engineer of Buzz right now, who says it's 2 p.m. Saturday. Most of the team is working here, and they're currently watching us live. So,
so what's next? Ask
yeah,
them what's
well,
next.
We get to tell them what's next. What are you talking about? Ask them.
All right, Leo. What's the one thing you want most?
I think certainly collapsible thread control is going to be huge because that's what turns down the annoyance factor. You got to get people to use this before you can start really taking off with it. I liked the fact, it was very apparent to me that it was kind of a crystallization of a lot of things going on at Google. The fact that my contacts groups were the groups that appeared here, that my profile finally had some value and it was using my social graph from my profile. A lot of these things were just, you know, clearly it's a crystallization of stuff. Initiatives have been going on for some time at Google. So to me, but I'm watching Google maybe more closely than just the general user. This made sense. And so I want to use it. But I think a lot of people are just going to come to it and look at the surface and say, well, it's got to be less noisy. I'm worried about privacy issues. You got to make it easy for me to hide the buzzes in my you can't screw up with my Gmail. You know, that's the premier product for Google. You can't screw Gmail to promote Buzz. So those are things I would love to see a lot of. You know, clearly they're watched friend feed very closely, and I'd love to see some more friend feed features like best of day, best of week, best of month. I'm thrilled they put like in. I think that's a very important way to weigh posts. I'd love to see inline enclosures in comments. I think that would be very useful.
By the way, I think now that both Facebook and Buzz have made unlike popular, I registered the domain unlike.com.
Yeah, like has always been a bad like has always been a bad term because it implies approval, and you know, a lot of times you don't want to say approve this. I just want people to pay attention to it. So, but I don't. Maybe that's we've all learned to go beyond that. I'd love to
Steve
see
Steve Rubell, Leo, who's been I think too rapidly negative on this. There's that kind of instant love or hate thing, declare it alive or dead. And I disagree with Steve about that. But he put up a post in Buzz collecting the wish list for people. And I think it's well over 30 now of things. If you look up Steve Rubell in Buzz, you'll find them. Number one was create a single destination where you can see and search all of Buzz. Number two, make it easy for profiles to follow who follows you, but lets you either hide individuals and so on and so forth. So it gets very detailed. But I think there's a lot of – to me, that's a good sign. There's a wish list of saying it's a Valentine. I want more.
But search all of Buzz is what the search box at the top does. I mean, that's there. The bit that I'm missing is search just the ones that I've been involved with.
Right.
You have to do like magic keywords to make that work.
Well, and you know, friend feeds, one of the friend feeds' real strengths was this amazing search, and you were able to say by the number of comments, by the number of likes, you could really use that to surface great content very quickly. And nobody ever really figured out friend feed. You know, the few who did really valued it. And I think there's a lot there. I'm sure that what's going on with the Buzz team is they certainly know about those features, but they want to make sure that they can expose them in a way that's intuitive. FriendFeed never really was intuitive for a lot of people. But, you know, having groups is huge. You know, there's some complaints. For instance, as soon as I start typing @Kevin, I get your Gmail address. I think there's a few people who wish that weren't the case.
I see people typing in the real name with the @ rather than the username.
Yeah, that breaks
not
it.
Getting where they wanted to go, yeah.
People will figure that part out.
Right, but it's not clear what it's going to show directly as you type it. It only changes it afterwards,
right?
Which is slightly tricky. Also, it doesn't let you add to external URLs, which is kind of a shame. It would be nice to be able to add out to someone's Jaiku account, someone's Twitter account, someone's FedFeed account.
I mean, clearly federation is built into this. And I think that as soon as, you know, now we have namespaces if you're going to do federation. And so, yes, absolutely. I should be able to convert, say, my Twit Army from Laconica to Buzz. And now it's a namespace. And so you should be able to say at Leo at twit.tv or whatever. And that should be part of, you know, that's, you need a good namespace convention to make. And that's, you've got one with email. So
my little wish list is I couldn't use my apps account, which is my main email.
Yeah.
I had to use my secondary Gmail account. So now I'm going to start to build equity up in the account I don't really use with people I don't really talk to much. So my wish list is get apps on fast.
Yeah.
I think David Giraud was saying they're going to do that. He said that some point this week. So
that's something we've talked about before, which is just essentially that the apps and needs to merge with Gmail.
Yeah, it's a second-class citizen sometimes.
Yeah. I really love phone integration. Both of the iPhone and the Nexus One, the Buzz interface is very usable, very strong. I love the built-in location, the ability to say, I'm here. It completely...
One thing I couldn't do, Leo, tip time, was I couldn't add... Foursquare, if it doesn't know where I am, I can add the place. I couldn't figure out how to add it.
Yeah, that would be a nice feature. It doesn't look like you... I didn't see a way to do that.
I want to make it smarter, which you think they'd have.
Although it has, because of Google Maps, again, another another technology, it has more information about where you are than anybody else. And I love the Google Map. I don't know if this is only on Nexus One, but there's a Google Maps layer for Buzz now. So you can turn that on, and now you see a map with all the local Buzzes.
That's on the web client, so it's available on iPhone as well.
Okay. I have to say that for a very early first release, it has so many nice usable features that to me, I had the exact opposite reaction that Steve did. I thought, not perfect, far from perfect, lots of rough edges, but boy, you can see the outlines of something that will be a killer product. And most importantly, is open standards, is using PubSub, HubBub, is federatable. Am I correct in that assessment? I looked at the API, but I'm not a programmer. It looked like, though, that my programmer said this is going to integrate very well with the stuff that we've been doing. It looks like it's Google's essentially giving it away, yes?
Yes, it looks like not all of it is there yet. At the moment, you've got feeds out and feeds in. You haven't got a way to post. I've got a way to see your consumption stream, your list of everything you're following.
Right.
But they've said, we're going to do this, we're going to make this available, and they've committed to that. And I believe that they're likely to do that well and correctly.
What about complete two-way I know if you know what you're doing, you can write code to make, for instance, that gets your posts out to Twitter. But that was, one of the things that's keeping me from using this exclusively and leaving FriendFeed is that I tweet when I post on FriendFeed. I'd love to do that. Things like that would be very handy. Kind of two-way interactivity with all of my other sites.
What I'd love to see is, and this is kind of what I tried to blog about, this notion of the beta too soon, I'd like to see the product roadmap more public so that we could help prioritize it, help find the booby traps that are there and say, hey, don't forget about this. And if it's going to use open standards anyway, I don't see the harm. And it's not as if Google's ahead on these things. That's why they had to buy Jaiku. They're catching up, so make it public and let us join in. Not as a democracy, but as a throng.
I think the discussions are happening in public. That's the thing. That if you actually join the Open Standards mailing list, you see that these discussions are going on how these things should work already. So it's that has been going on for a while. It's more that that may not give a product roadmap, but it certainly gives what people are thinking about. The thing is, what happens with the standardization stuff is that you tend to do that after two or three people have had a try at it. And you say, okay, what have these things got in common? Here's how to standardize that. And there's a good discussion going on about the actual structure of the feed formats and what goes where. When you mix, at the moment, when you bring friend feed in, it shows the actual, your actual post twice, and then it shows the friend feed set of responses in the body. So it looks a bit odd in Google Buzz. I think ClickSet has done a slightly smoother job of fitting the two together, but we're going to, as we start plugging these together, some of the other assumptions start being revealed as well about how these things interoperate. And the thing I was saying about feeding out to Twitter is an issue because Twitter has the very tight number of characters constraint, which means that and it's not obvious how you would then attach other bits and pieces and richer stuff to that. So that's always going to be a trickier funnel to get stuff through.
Any other wish list items for you, Jeff? Things you'd like to see on this?
I'd be curious what Yuri's wishing for most next. Since you actually might be a
you
window
might win.
On.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think there's two things that make this interesting. One of them is maybe rather an organizational question for me, because I think this is actually really transforming Google. Inside of Google, this Google is sort of becoming more social. This is infrastructure that's going to be available to all the different Google apps, Google Maps, search, like all these huge apps. And I think we're just kind of starting to enable new kinds of innovation that's going to take place there. So I think this is that's part of the reason why I don't expect Google to sideline this product, because it's so central to the future of the company. And that's just my personal opinion. But again, it's something I believe in. Now, secondly, about what I'd like to see in Buzz, I think we're barely scratching the surface of mobile today.
Yeah.
Just across the line, not just Buzz. I think Buzz is doing a much more interesting opening to the mobile space than Facebook, than Twitter, than any of these guys are doing right now, any of the big social services, especially with what you guys already mentioned, which is, for instance, displaying the location-based, which I really like the UI.
I do too.
Props to the UI designer there, Brett Leiter, for creating a great UI for that.
Yeah.
So this is the beginning. And now I'll tell you something. When we were working on Jaiku, we were working for the Nokia i60 platform. Leo, you remember that. You were on that
platform,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. And it was about mobile. I mean, mobile was it was mobile-centric.
So one of the things, or just to give some examples of stuff that we found exciting on that platform was, we were able to access Bluetooth, so we could actually detect who you were around and then possibly let you share that. We could do stuff on the background, like, the location detection. We could tell what kind of music you were playing on your phone at the time. All this kind of stuff that when we got the iPhone, granted it was great because we suddenly had distribution for mobile apps. But personally, I was disappointed because it felt like a huge step backwards in terms of all the innovation that could be possible, because we didn't have the open APIs to access all these parts of the platform. Now, with the new Androids and some of the new handsets coming out, I think we're going to see that stuff come into play again. And that's making me really excited, because I think we're going to see finally some of that, social innovation actually happen in the mobile space. And I hope that's going to be plugged into Buzz.
I remember on Jaiku, I could, as you said, I could just say who's around me, I think the timing on this is interesting, because of course South by Southwest is coming up, and the history of South by Southwest is this is where these kinds of things break. Twitter first, Foursquare later. I can see this, especially with that location element being huge at South by Southwest. I don't know if that was Google's thinking, but I can just see how
that's really interesting. Because to me, the bottom line importance of what they're trying to do here as part of the larger strategy is, of course, Google always wants to intuit intent. It needs ever better relevance machines. And I heard that in the announcement strongly, and I see it in this, that the more Google can give us relevance, the more we get tied that way. The notion of temporary relevance and geographic relevance, you happen to be around these people right now, you happen to be this spot right now, on that basis, here's how I'm going to serve you, I think becomes huge. And I'll be curious how people can use this as about the Southwest to, what's the next hashtag? if we, the users, made up the hashtag and made up that convention, how do we use Buzz in ways that would make South by Southwest a killer experience? And I ain't the one to figure that out.
We're all looking at Yuri.
But it seems that connectivity stays at Southwest.
Go ahead, Yuri.
No, I was just joking that I guess I have to buy a plane ticket to South by Southwest.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I'll tell you, I'll be honest, it makes me want to go to South by Southwest, because I can just see this thing coming alive there.
You should all be there. Kevin, are you going?
I'm going. I haven't booked a plane yet, but I am going. Yes.
You know what?
I'm going. Jake's going. Come on, guys.
I'll go. But you know what? The nature of Buzz is, even if you're not going to South by Southwest, you are perforce going to be there. Because it will completely occupy your inbox.
This might be the first time an established billion-dollar company breaks at South by Southwest.
Well, that Petri messaged me. He said, I'm glad we could put this on a platform you can't break, Leo. But I may not be able to, but South by Southwest could.
Well, last year, basically, the phone networks broke at South by Southwest.
That's right. That's right.
They were sort of shipping in new portable towers to try and cope with it.
Right.
So hopefully they've had thought about that.
I gave Jake a Nexus One for his birthday. This is my son Yuri.
Wait a minute! Not your Nexus One.
No, not mine. I got another one.
We're interesting. Now so you've come around a little bit on.
I got
the
a
Nexus
DLD,
one.
And so, but he said one of the advantages is he'll actually have a phone that he can use at South by Southwest.
Yeah, nobody uses T-Mobile. So you're safe there. Stay off AT&T. Anything works. Yeah, no, I think that it is a nice combination with the Nexus One because you can kind of see it all of a piece, but it works beautifully on the iPhone. It's just as good on the iPhone. And I imagine on anything with a decent browser, it'll be just as good. You wrote, Kevin, a while ago when Twitter came out, your Twitter theory post on your blog, Apeus Epigony. And then now you've applied this to Google Buzz. Right. I remember we talked about flow, faces, phadic following, and all of that. Tell me what you think now, looking at Buzz, knowing what you know about Twitter, how it fits in.
Well, I was saying some of it. I think those same pieces apply, but some of them are slightly twisted. So the flow isn't as good as Twitter because it's in your email box and they've put an unread count on it.
Right.
So that means it doesn't feel like a stream, you know,
right.
if you dip into and dip out of.
That's why I moved it. That's why I moved it to a folder where it's out of sight, out of mind, and I just now dip in and I don't see it. Yeah,
but that's part of the reason Twitter works so well is that you dip in and out of it. You don't feel compelled to actually answer everything.
But isn't it nice to have the choice?
Potentially.
I talk to people who say when I go on Twitter, I read everything I missed since I was on last, which to me is nuts.
Well, it depends on how many people you're following, but yeah, that you can do that certainly. But the other thing that they did was they privileged the replies over the people you follow.
That's weird.
And that changes the tone significantly.
Yeah.
Because the tone on Twitter when you're looking at it is that you're seeing comments from a bunch of people you've chosen to see, got their face next to them. You can see the comment. You can reply to it. It's very comfortable.
Right.
If you want to see people sending stuff to you that you don't know, you click on the mentions thing and you find some people you may want to know. But it's a separate space. But that's the sort of second order piece. And some of the clients change that. But that's the sort of basic UX that Twitter's got baked in. And Buzz inverts that. It puts the stuff from your friends in the little Buzz tab, and also it hides half of them. The execs at the launch were saying, we want to make sure we're only showing you important, relevant stuff, which is missing the phatic point. It's missing the point that a lot of this communication is actually just social intent. If you look at people chatting on Twitter or on Facebook, they're just sort of saying, they're basically saying hi to each other, that I'm still here. And you know, there may not be much actual semantic content, but there is social content in that. There's grooming. And if some machine is hiding those from me, the place is going to feel much less comfortable. So I got a sense that they were missing that nuance of Twitter with Buzz. They were saying, oh, we'll only show you the important ones, which are the ones someone else has replied to. And then the other piece is that they don't put the faces on the replies. So the stuff from the strangers doesn't have faces.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't tell the friends from the strangers. They've just got these names, and it's all a bit odd. It feels like stepping back into IRC or Usenet or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have the richness there that you have. You know, the contrast there, you know, the sort of the opposite of that is Daily Booth. Daily Booth, they let you not only put your face in the reply, but they let you change your photograph for each reply. So that's making that enormously more engaging. And they've missed a trick with the faces there. The following stuff, they've got the right following model, except the way they bootstrap it is confusing because they bootstrap it from your email and chat stuff. And then they don't show you it to edit first. If you actually walk through the login stages on most of these social sites, they will do the give us me your address book thing, and then they'll give you a check and uncheck people phase before you go on to the next one. With this, they don't do that. They just do that straight away, and then you have to go and dig through and try and fix that. So that has been a big part of the confusing onboarding because people suddenly find they're following their bank manager or they're following somebody they've had a lot of email correspondence with who isn't somebody they actually want to have that social connection to. What are my other ones? I should actually be reading my post rather than starting it from memory.
You've been doing very well. Let me see if I can pull it up.
the other... Let me see.
I had it here.
Oh, the mutual media stuff. That's it. So the publics and the mutual media. The idea there is that we each have a different set of publics, but they overlap. And so that actually ends up being more stable than showing everyone everything. If we're all seeing a different subset of it, then for stuff to move between them, someone has to make a conscious choice, which is the mutual mediation thing that Jeff and I have talked about before. If I care about this thing enough to say something about it, to like it, to share it, to pass it on, then I'm adding value to that news, and I'm adding value to you if you value my opinion. And by not putting some slight sort of damping there, but anyone replying can pop up, you're basically muddying that signal quite a lot. So I think that the mechanism is missed a bit there. Now, you know, they're smart people at Google. They'll probably figure some of this stuff out once they get more data to play with. But they may not be looking at it from this point of view because they culturally at Google, there's a lack of sociologists. I'm sure Yuri can comment on that. But it tends to be a very, very engineering-led culture. And so they won't actually have thought about saying, oh, maybe if we should get some social theorists in to talk to us about the flow of information.
Dude, it's interesting. So this stuff, as new as it is, they're already sociology applies. I mean, it's understood, or is it something completely new and different? It's not, I guess.
Yuri?
Are you a sociologist, Yuri?
I am trained as a sociologist, actually.
I didn't know that. Oh, interesting.
That's why Kevin is giving me a hard time all the time.
Yeah. No, I'm saying you're important.
He's giving you credit.
Exactly. I'm saying you're what they need.
So when you studied sociology, I guess they talk about things like the Dunbar number and so forth. But do we understand things like social graph? Isn't this awfully new? And it's in a digital context, kind of different from the social graph you might have talked about in a tribal context.
Well, I think the fundamentals never change, Leo. I mean, we all kind of know that just from experience that, you know, there are certain things that people always look for. And, you know, when new technologies and new types of media come along, we just kind of figure out new technical ways of getting what we want. And, you know, those things are, you know, things like attention, appreciation, you know, like, for instance, the demonstration of face, which is actually what I was reading out of the comment that I think what was really perceptive of Kevin Marks there was, you know, pointing out the fact that the faces are missing from those replies. And if you think about having a conversation with somebody and all of a sudden you no longer see their face,
right?
You know, it's just not something that's disruptive to the way we're built as, you know, animals and how we're expecting to be able to, you know, get some kind of a visual cue on who this person is and how they're feeling. So, to me, these all spell out opportunities. And, you know, it's clear why, you know, this decision was made. It's because they knew there was going to be a lot of conversation. There were going to be a lot of comments, and that takes up screen real estate. So, you know, I'm expecting us to have an evolution right now. Like for the next 12 to 18 months, I'm expecting this product to really evolve rapidly. And personally, like if that doesn't happen, if the Gmail team, if the Buzz team kind of gets stuck in a rut and isn't able to keep updating the product, then I think we have reason to start, you know, feeling critical and feeling worried. But right now, I'm pretty excited. You know, it only took about 24 hours for Google to make the first changes based on some of this feedback about the privacy issues, right? And that's pretty incredible from, you know, a company this size. So I'm really hopeful that we're going to see this thing evolve. And I also like the way the team and, you know, the extended team, because there's also Googlers who are not directly on the Buzz team, but who are very active right now on Buzz, on the different discussion groups. And frankly, looking at some of those other products that, you know, maybe didn't fare so well, we didn't see that kind of engaged, you know, the actual engineers being that engaged with the publics. So again, you know, that makes me hopeful. In fact, by the way, talking about South by Southwest, the Buzz team members just pinged me on IM saying that they will be having a panel or a session at South by Southwest where all the Buzz creators are going to be on the same session. And it's going to be called Gmail Behind the Scenes. So if you're going to South by Southwest, make sure not to miss that panel.
Yeah. I want to take a little bit of a break. When we come back, I want to talk about how hard it is or how hard it will be for third parties to develop for Buzz, be part of Buzz. But that was something that the ecosystem around Twitter that really propelled Twitter forward. If you guys want to take a short break, we're going to do a little commercial. So Yuri and Jeff, I should say Yuri Engstrom is here. He is with Google, the creator of Jaiku. And he is working currently on what?
I'm no longer at Google.
You're not at Google.
I've left Google.
Where are you?
I'm in Helsinki, Finland.
And what are you doing? I didn't realize that. That's great. What are you doing these days?
Enjoying early retirement.
Excellent.
I'm just kidding.
Yuri, you're going to be much more on this show more often than in that case. Well, that's great. Although we're keeping him up. It's well after midnight. Our time. Oh, it's so great. All right. Yuri Engstrom. You can go to zengstrom.com to see his postings. Of course, Jeff Jarvis is with us of buzzmachine.com. Kevin Marks from ribbit.com at British Telecom. Gina has the day off. And you guys take a break. Smoke them if you got them, because we're going to give you a minute here while we... But is that an anachronism? If we have a little moment here to talk about our friends at Citrix, the folks who do GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is the online meeting service that makes it easy. It's empowering this ability for people to be anywhere in the world and still work together, collaborate, pitch, train. GoToMeeting from Citrix makes it so easy to do that. You just go to GoToMeeting.com/twig right now. You can try it for free. A 30-day trial. So easy to install, Mac or PC. When you go there, within seconds, you'll have it running. And now, the next time you have a meeting, you just go to GoToMeeting.com. You click the Start a Meeting button. Boom. You got a meeting ID now. You can hand that out. And you can have people in there with you. They'll see what's on your screen. They can take over control so you can see what's on their screen. They can run programs on your computer, so it's great for training. Of course, great for PowerPoint and Keynote. And for $49 a month, all the meetings you want, including voiceover, internet, and free teleconferencing, this is a great deal. Sure, we'll save you a lot of money on travel. We use it literally every day here at the Twit Cottage for something, either a meeting or one of our shows. It's just been a great buy for us, and I know you'll be very happy with it, too. But you try it for free. See if it fits into your workflow. I bet it will. GoToMeeting.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of the This Week in Google show. So your cigarettes are burned down and you're ready to continue on with our discussion of Google Buzz, which came out 3 days ago and already has certainly gotten a lot of attention. Some negative, I think mostly positive. How easy will this be to develop, Kevin, for, in terms of third-party applications, things like this? It's using well-known standards, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, no, the goal is for it to be using just the set of open standards that we've been developing as some of them sort of started out as being part of Open Social. A lot of them separate out into independent standards. Activity Streams is the key one. The idea of that is it gives you a way to express these richer updates in feeds and route them back and forth. But there are others. There's XFN is the standard for saying, I'm connecting these sites together. This is me in other places that the Google profiles already use, and use that to bring sites in. There's another program. Standard that's being debated, which is Salmon, which is designed to let the comments flow from one site to another. So if I comment on something, you want that comment to flow upstream to the source of it and then flow back downstream again. So if you've started something in friend feed and it's gone over to Buzz and the comments have gone in Buzz, you probably want those propagated back to friend feed as well, for example. Right. So there's that one's fairly new and is still being debated. The activity stream stuff is actually pretty well developed. It's already supported by people as diverse as Facebook and MySpace and Netflix and Last.fm. So there's a whole set of stuff going on around that. The other thing is, do you know the Identica or status.net?
Yep.
Those guys have, although they implemented the Twitter API, they originally had their own API model called Open Microblogging,
right.
And they're now shifting that to use the same set of standards. So that will be a reference implementation.
So OMB, between the two. Oh, that's wonderful. But Kevin, your mic is rubbing against your collar, by the way.
Sorry.
I actually run a Laconica instance, so I'm very interested in that. That OMB standard is a great federation standard. Will it be possible, Yuri, for somebody to run a Buzz server?
I don't know if it's going to be possible to run a Buzz server. I would be doubtful of that. There are options like Laconica, like the open source Jaiku engine that I would assume people would be running. However, what we're all expecting is for these all to be pluggable to each other, and actually just kind of what I'm hoping is that you can set up something similar to WordPress instance and, you know, create your own hosted identity on your own server. And then, you know, you can use that as a way to publish to so that anybody can follow anyone, regardless of what service we're on. This is actually an important feature, by the way, that I should just mention. You know, we've had a lot of conversation right now in the blogosphere about Buzz. You know, we've had people going, like, you know, Jason Calcan has said, game over, you know, Facebook is the new MySpace.
He said Facebook in one fell swoop lost 50% of its value. He might have been overstating it a little bit, but...
That's Jason for you, I guess. but, you know, and others like, you know, the Newsweek tech blog wrote that Buzz exists because Google feels threatened by Twitter and Facebook and wants to kill them. this is actually a direct quote.
Yeah.
And you know, what I just kind of wanted to point out, and I actually wrote about this on my blog, too, was as entertaining as it is to look at this as a controversy and, you know, a competition really across, you know, or over who gets to rule the social web. You know, which one of the big companies is it going to be? Is it going to be Twitter? Is it going to be Facebook? Is it going to be Google? You know, that's really, I believe, missing the point. The point is that, you know, this isn't a zero-sum game. You know, we really need to look at this as something where, you know, the prize is not total domination of the social web by one single silo. You know, that's not going to serve anyone. In fact, the real enemy that we should be fighting here is not each other in terms of the companies. It's this idea of, you know, totalitarianism, which we get in silos, where we basically have one person who gets to make all the decisions for the masses. And that's why these open standards are so important, because what I really want to have, frankly, personally, is, you know, 5 years from now to be able to at reply or follow anybody on the web by putting in their email address or having some kind of an algorithm that is out there looking for, you know, conversations that might interest me and putting those together, regardless of which language they're being, you know, carried out in, regardless of which service these people are on. I should still be able to follow them, and I should be able to take part in that without necessarily even knowing that, you know, what service it is, because of these open standards. And that's really when we get a global conversation going. And I think it's going to be very important to us as a society, just globally. And I'm going to be very disappointed if we end up in these silos that don't talk to each other for a long time.
Yuri, I'm so with you on this. I've been saying this for so long, and I think for a long time it was unheard. Twitter was such a success, and nobody really wanted to, you know, even hear any negative about it. And this is so obviously a problem. And that's one of the reasons, you know, regardless of flaws, that I would so quickly embrace Buzz and so happy to see it as a chance to break through those silos, get out of those silos, get the data out of there. And, you know, when I hear people complain about the privacy issues, the real but relatively minor privacy issues of Buzz, I have to think, but you're using Facebook? You know, I mean, I think that they're just not comparable. Now, we have a doctor in the chat room who says, you know, I use Gmail for confidential discussions with patients, and revealing those patients' identities is a problem, and I can understand that. And so there are people who have to be very careful. When I started the radio show today, talking to a much more general audience, while I was glad to say how great Buzz was, the first thing I had to say is, but you should know that there's this privacy issue, and you should not say yes to Buzz until you are ready to deal with it, or you find a way around it, or maybe create a separate account. But those are minor, I think, compared to the great value that Buzz is going to add by being an open standard and using open standards and
being built on open standards. Yeah,
yeah.
No, I think that's it. I mean, the thing is, we've been discussing these open standards, and there's always been a bit of, well, you go first to that.
Google had, you know, it had to be Google.
Google will go first. You know, they said, okay, they've done it with portable contacts. They've done it with WebFinger. So you can straightforwardly log into Google and get the list of contacts out of there through OAuth without having to spoof anything. And you can get as much access to it as they have access to internally for the Google phone or whatever. So they've been a good citizen in that respect. And saying that, you know, that's the way it should be. Now, that's good. I agree very much with Yuri that this isn't a zero sum game. It's very much a positive sum game when people are interoperating. And there's a really, you know, the strongest test for openness is that if two people can interoperate without knowing each other exist. And that's if you've got a protocol like HTTP or SMTP, that's how it works. You write to the protocol. You're not writing to a specific server.
Right.
At the moment, we're still a bit at the stage where we're trying to make the stuff fit together. We're debating about what's the title, what goes in the title, and what goes in the body and stuff like that. But we have ways of moving feeds between sites. We've had that for a while. We're now discussing how to put richer data in those feeds so that we can do useful things with them, get rid of duplicates, know when there are photos embedded, know when there are people mentioned, things like that. That stuff is starting to come together and make sense. The other piece is that people are beginning to build stuff that are effectively self-hosted versions of this. I know there's a project called the Mine Project, with the idea that the data is mine, that lets you host your own set of feeds and activities and feed them just to the people you want to see them, rather than hand them to a large corporation first. I think we're going to see more of that made possible by this. I know Tantek Celik's been building something similar himself to have his own hosted blog thing that actually feeds updates into Twitter and pulses. And obviously Identica is an example of that too, where you can download the code and run it yourself. So there are people are starting to plug these projects together and make it possible to do this. And I think that will lead to a great set of creativity. I mean, the other thing I said in my analysis of Buzz was that they don't necessarily have to get it right themselves if they're supporting the open standards well, but that somebody else can replace pieces of it too. And that's obviously very attractive.
In some ways, that's a risk of the strength of Google, is that it might be very tempting for people to say, well, we'll just let Google do it. They're clearly, they've got all the developers, they can do all the work, and there might be not so much incentive to participate in the ecosystem. I think Twitter people felt like we have to help Twitter.
I'm not sure that I think there's a bit of both there. I think the Twitter ecosystem was it grew up because they did put a good API there.
Right.
I know it's not an open standard API, but it's a pretty well designed API for Twitter. It fits Twitter very well. But also they didn't build many features themselves, so there was a sort of obvious deficit that other developers wanted to make up.
Exactly, and that's the risk with Google.
The fear with Google may be that Google's going to do this. I shouldn't be in that space. But I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing these other developers building things and plugging bits together. I'm seeing lots of good conversations in the sort of standards meetings about how do you make these pieces fit together to make them flow. The great work that Monica's been doing at MySpace to make sure that their stuff can go in and out is part of that. There are people at Facebook like David Recordon who are very sure they want to do this too.
Good.
And so we are seeing and people at Microsoft like Rob Dolin and Dara Bisanjo are making sure that it plugs into their world too. There's people at all these companies who get that the web is an agreement, a set of protocols that we move stuff around, and we want this to happen. And they occasionally bump into sort of business disputes. We had the whole thing with Google Friend Connect and Facebook and the sort of standoff there where nobody could agree to do anything, just as you have the standoff between Google and Apple about getting their apps into the store and things like that. So, there will be bits like that, but overall the standards world moves on and we find ways to move stuff back and forth between these things. And, my take is that in the long run, the open stuff does win precisely because you can change it and interoperate with it and do useful things with it. That's my, it's my optimism about this. So I don't expect that the closed thing will win out in the long run precisely because it is much less generative. This is the smartest people work for someone else issue.
Yeah. We've wanted to have textual streaming as a third kind. We do audio and video. I wanted to do text streaming because text has some real advantages. And so we've been working on this concept using XMPP for over a year now. And the engineers who are working on this with us are actually really excited because our XMPP maps well to PubSub HubBub and Salmon will be very valuable for us for in and out. So it really, because of the supportive standards, it looks like we can take something that we wanted to do and make it work well with Buzz. So it is a platform that developers can use, and we had some very specific needs. Actually, I had initially misread Wave and thought Wave would be the thing we would use. In some ways, this is what I was hoping Wave would be.
Well, I think Wave is different.
Oh, it is, obviously. It's a collaboration tool.
I'm missing Jita here, obviously, but Wave is primarily a document editing system. That's what it is underneath. You're all editing the same document, and the messages and updates are actually edits to that document.
Right.
Whereas what Buzz is doing is building on these flows of individual messages that are connected together that we're seeing across the web. You're not trying to construct a document. It's something that's not edited in the same way. So that is a difference, and it's a difference of approach. And I know that you can always transform one thing to something that's a bit like another. And I know a lot of the Wave thing was initially conversational, but actually, I think where Wave's place is to be a good place where you're co-editing something, where you're creating a work product, whereas this stuff is more about flows of events from one place to another.
Jeff, you wanted to say something?
I absolutely agree. I've long said that the winner in social is not going to be some site we all join. It's he or she who brings organization to our lives across the web. And so I think that's right. I think I don't want to get into that kind of fighting thing that we were in. Nonetheless, I still want to ask, if you are sitting at Twitter today, and if you're sitting at Facebook today and Foursquare today, what's the smart strategy?
The strategy is to stick with what you're doing. They have a strong set of users who go to their sites and care about the communities they have there. They will probably welcome more flow going in and out. In some ways and connect the pieces together. I think it would be great if the Facebook stream can plug into Buzz and vice versa. And MySpace too and Twitter and so on. Twitter already does. The thing Facebook did today or yesterday this week by doing XMPP support, so you can use your chat client that you use for AIM and for GTalk to talk to Facebook chat as well. That's a great step in the right direction as well. So, you know, that starting to see these pieces actually plug together and assume that you can have these different flows in different places is enormously important. You know, well, so the right answer for them is to not sort of put the barriers up and say, okay, we've got to compete with this and make sure the stuff doesn't plug together, but say we have enough faith in ourselves and the way that we construct things for our users that we can keep adding value there and not fret about Google taking it all over. As you know, some of the things I said about the difference between the feel of Twitter and Buzz are advantages for Twitter, and Twitter can maintain those by plugging into that.
These Foursquare and these other sites are not going to go away. You're right. They have a community. The whole key is federation interoperability, and it seems like it would be in their interest to support that. Although,
so what about Friend Feed? If it's the closest to Buzz, and we've been declaring it sputtering for a while,
this is a good excuse to shut it down.
I disagree. I think Paul was talking about it this week of saying this is great. I'd love to be able to insert bits of stuff into Gmail like that. We'd like to work out how to connect the two together. There's been discussion on how you make the comments flow back and forth in a useful way. Friend Feed already has the pub-sub-hub-up support, so you can feed Buzz into Friend Feed and it updates rapidly. So there's a whole bunch of bits where those two are starting to fit together. I'm hoping that can inform Facebook's thinking across the broader use of Facebook as well. I think it will. I mean, overall, my sense is that there's lots of support for the open standard stuff here. My hope is that this isn't going to suddenly make everyone else go, oh, well, Google's done this, but then we need to do something that shuts it down. Google's done this, we need to do something that supports the same standards so that our users can have this experience too. And that's, a lot of them have already been doing that. You know, the Microsoft Live experience for consuming activity streams is really good and has a huge number of users who like it a lot. But it's not, this is This Week in Google. We're naturally Google users rather than Microsoft Live users here. And it's the same thing of there are all these sets of users in different places who are doing roughly the same thing underneath, which is why we can use common standards, but the places have a different feel to them. As Jesse Stay was saying, well, why didn't Google build this on Orkut? Well, Google didn't build this on Orkut because there aren't enough users in America on Orkut for it to make sense, but there are very, very loyal users of Orkut in Brazil and India who use it very much in this way already, but bringing that to a different user base will be tricky because they've got their own sort of sense of who's there and who's in it. So I think having an open standard means that we can each choose the set of communities we want to interact with and have the stuff flow between them rather than have to adopt a particular site or a particular way of looking at it.
There is a little perception problem. I showed this to a friend, and her immediate reaction was, "Oh God, not another place to go and share stuff." You know,
well, exactly. I mean, that's the natural reaction to a generation of social web users who've grown up with silos, right? Where you've grown accustomed to the fact that every 18 months, the wild herd roams to some other place, and suddenly you have to be creating your account all over again.
Or tries to roam and then is all alone on the plane.
All us yaks.
We yaks.
I should say reindeer, pardon me.
Yeah. Don't do that again. Remember, it's reindeer, not yaks.
This ain't Tibet.
Now, I agree with, just to come back to the original question about what Twitter should do, what Facebook should do, is I agree with Kevin in that, you know, these places have a different feel to them. And that's the whole point of, you know, trying to get the information to flow, is to, you know, actually get a situation going here where you differentiate with innovation rather than with, you know, owning the biggest user base.
Right.
That makes sense. Now, like for Twitter, clearly, I mean, you know, you look at Buzz, and Buzz is about, you know, it's much closer to, for instance, what FriendFeed and Jaiku were, which is it's really about a conversation. And I think Buzz's challenge as a product, and now remember, Buzz is, when we talk about Google, Buzz is bigger than just Buzz for Google, because underneath there's infrastructure that's shared and that's surfaced in lots of other Google services too, for instance, Google Latitude. Now, but specifically for Buzz, I think inside of Gmail, it's about creating this flow of a conversation. Whereas, you know, at least Twitter for me is really about the phatic stuff that, you know, that Kevin was mentioning. And I think that's why we're going to see you know, things like Foursquare and probably like I believe personally, like that's one of the things I'm looking at right now, is that there's probably a space for an even more a simpler way to just update, like, hey, this is, I want to see a movie, or, you know, I'm out with kids at a park right now, with just, you know, short taps without even possibly needing to text anything. Mm. Also, because we're, you know, a lot of us are now on touchscreen phones, where frankly still I don't think the text input is optimal. So I think there's an opportunity to figure out social interaction that doesn't require typing. But, you know, so all of these should be different services. You know, we should have this wealth of different services, and they don't all need to copy each other. We just want that basic information to flow.
So right? What's the best way for Google to demonstrate the two-way of this? I mean, at some point, not just that I can use it to author Twitter, but I want to be able to take my entire feed out of, and I don't know, put it in Outlook, God forbid. But if it's going to be that open standards way to just move things around, kind of the new SIP of the new age, then I think Google has to demonstrate that pretty quickly. What would the clearest demonstration of that be?
Well, you can do that today. You can follow, you can subscribe to any Buzz users. Public updates via PubSub Hubbub and get them in real time. So there's a way, if you want to get the fire hose out of Google right now, for instance, yeah, you would, you know, just subscribe to each individual user's PubSub Hubbub feed.
See, that's huge.
So if you go to ClickSet, C-L-I-Q-S-E-T, clickset.com, they let you do that now. They've built an activity streams-based system there, have been hooking up to all the stuff, and they make that work with Buzz now. So you can wire stuff both ways. Wow. And you get a different view of it. So there's one example of somebody who's already built that. And there, you know, there are others. I'm sure that the Microsoft team will be absorbing these feeds soon, because they've already absorbed 75 different kinds of activity streams from different sources. So, you know, at the moment, it's like, okay, they've launched this thing. It's outputting stuff in the standards form. We're going to have a bit of iteration where we go, oh, you meant that by that, and I meant this by that. We should clean that up. And those discussions are already going on. But we're going to start seeing more and more of these things plug together and make sense.
So you believe there's incentive for companies that might be threatened by this to cooperate rather than to shut down?
Very much. But there's also incentives for other companies as well. The example of Netflix is a strong one. You know, Netflix did try and build their own social stuff inside Netflix, but I haven't friended anyone on there. I've probably friended two people by accident, I think.
Right.
Whereas they make it straightforward to get a stream out that says, mm-hmm, Kevin is watching this movie, Kevin has added this one to his queue, Kevin gave this one 4 stars or whatever. They've got that there, and it's coming out as an activity stream now, which we can then pipe into this system and decide who we share that with.
That's interesting. So who would be the company that would also best demonstrate from the other side? If Amazon pulled this stream in, I mean, who'd be somebody who could use this in a really creative way for their own strategy and own service?
That's what we don't know. I mean, I think, you know, in your field, in the news business, I think this is enormously significant.
Oh. You're right. New York Times and my friends in the New York Times, I have none. Yeah. More reasons than one.
Right. And the stuff that Huffington posted with bringing in friends from Twitter and from Facebook was a good marker for that. But they had to write a separate one for Twitter and a separate one for Facebook. The hope with doing these standards is that you can do one and you can choose which set it comes from. You can say, okay, I've decided to keep my friends in Facebook. I've decided to keep my friends here. I keep my activity updates there. I want to watch them here. I want to watch them there. That should be up to you, but you should be able to feed them back and forth to the other places as well. And conversely, you should potentially be able to feed a subset of them. I think that's where the subgrouping thing that Yuri was talking about that isn't fully baked yet, that's going to get interesting. We're starting to find that when you sign up for a site, you want to delegate credentials to somewhere else. You want to log in with Facebook. You want to log in with Twitter. You want to log in with Google. We're seeing more and more of that, and that's a huge time saver over the import process. But I suspect we're going to suddenly say, well, actually, I want to sign in that with just my work colleagues. I want to sign in that one with just my patients. I want to sign in that one with just my family and do that. And so far, I think I'm not sure anyone's been doing that well yet. I think the closest may be Ning, where you can have separate sites, separate social networks for separate subsets of things. I think that's going to start getting significant. So it will be the same thing of I can take whichever place I'm using to the other place.
And whichever identity I have, too.
Whichever identity I have, whichever subset of facet of that I want to do. The infrastructure is there for that. That's supported in the APIs and the way that OAuth works and the way that Portable Context works and the way that Activity Streams works. You can decide that different people get to see different views of it. It's just a question of building a user interface that makes sense for that, making that stuff flow, and actually having enough choices that the user can make sense of that. So I think that's going to be a significant part of this going forward over the next couple of years.
By the way, I signed up for Aardvark today.
A new Google service.
It's a new Google site, and I could use either my Facebook identity or my Google Apps identity, which I was very happy with.
Mm-hmm. Aardvark is an interesting service that allows you to ask questions and have your answers come from your social graph and have them ask questions of you.
And I asked a question today immediately, and since we have Yuri here, in honor of Finland, I actually do want to get a sauna for the house. And so I asked, what company should I use? And it took about 20 minutes, and somebody came back in and gave an answer.
Hmm. Awesome. So what company was it?
I actually didn't like it. Like a little beaky sauna. Do you have any recommendation, Yuri?
Well, you can buy the lumber from me now because I've become a forest grower as of recent.
Really?
So if you need any timber, let me know.
Do you have one in your house?
Huh? Of course he does. He's finished.
Of course. Come on. You know.
So is it infrared or wood-fired or electric? I'm sorry. I just got to ask this.
Oh, we don't have electric saunas. I mean, we do some. But yeah, the real saunas are obviously all wood-fired. And there's a couple of different flavors of them. There's the most exotic one is called the smoke sauna, where you actually heat it up by, there's no way for the smoke to get out. So the room gets full of smoke and all the walls get, covered in soot, and then you let the smoke out.
It seems a little dangerous. Oh, you let the smoke out. Oh, good. Okay.
Oh, yeah, you let the smoke out first.
Okay.
Unless I'm sorry for really that detour, Leo, but I think
no,
I
I'm fascinated. I think some
hardware.
So coming back to this question of Buzz versus the other services, though, I mean, I don't want to make it seem like a flat playing field where everyone should just coexist and be happy. And I think competition is good. And my question here for you guys is, do you believe that you will, will Buzz become a more central part of your social life going forward on the web, or will it just kind of, stay along the side there with Twitter and Facebook?
I'll speak by myself because it's in Gmail, and I think this is true for a lot of people. It's going to end up being the default just because you're there all the time anyway. If you put in the features that make it easy to manage the information, easy to find the information, it's just kind of a natural thing to do, to click the Buzz to check it. And I hope actually to use it all the time. I'm already using it on my phone. As an experiment today, instead of posting in a friend feed room, I posted on Buzz. And we've got many of this, far more comments, and a lot of the same kind of conversation going on. So I'd say, for me, in fact, I was even considering replacing everything with Buzz. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jeff?
It depends. I think that it has to have the kind of controls to reduce the noise rather than add to it. That's one. Two, I have to be able to use it, and I'm no Gina Trapani, so I can't program anything. So I want to be able to have people who create things for me so that I cannot abandon. I don't want to abandon the public I have on Twitter.
No, I can't do that either, actually.
And so I want to use this to publish to that. And in a sense, Twitter made me abandon my blog too much. And I regret that. So that I don't want to go through that again. I want to find ways to do what you're all promising will happen, but I don't see yet. And I'm going to be impatient to get that I can use this as a tool for my avatars all over the web. When that's there, and it's not there yet, when that's there, yes, that's extremely powerful.
Kevin?
Well, I think, you know, plugging the pieces together are important. One of the things we do at Ribbit is we have it set up so that when your phone rings, we show you the last status updates from your friends across different social networks. Mm. And again, at the moment, we're having to write per network code for that.
Right.
But the idea of being able to do that generically across open standards is a powerful thing. And that's, you know, that's, again, we don't want to have to build that infrastructure ourselves for everything. We much rather use the ones that you already use and connect you to the people who you're already using there. Having to actually say, okay, you know, in order to do this, we need to build a social network site would be a mistake. So I think there's lots of opportunities for people to take pieces of this and say, how can I plug this stuff together? We've seen that with the ecosystem around Twitter, ecosystem around Facebook, ecosystem around the other social sites, that it's possible to build applications that just do the piece that you want to do and not have to build all this other infrastructure first. You know, that's the huge value of this. And I think that bringing that back to something that people use as regularly as Gmail is important. You know, there are sets of people, I think a big part of this is, there are sets of people who live in Gmail, who live in email, and a lot of them have moved to Gmail because it's a good way to live in email. And so this is going to bring the world that we're used to from the social web to that group of people. Now that, you know, and yeah, it's, there are places where that's going to be uncomfortable for them to begin with. I mean, and then Google needs to be more careful about not, you know, crossing compartments like they did for some of the people already. But I think that by bringing it to the tool that they're already using, that's an actual added value point for those people, because they don't want to go over to Twitter to look at stuff. They don't want to go over to Facebook necessarily to look at stuff. Whereas conversely, the people who are happy in Facebook and just use Gmail for talking to the bank and the university, the way that we use paper mail before, are not going to be as interested in Buzz, but are going to be focused on the stuff over there. So just being able to pipe the stuff back and forth is going to be valuable for you wherever you decide to sort of center your life on this. And I like Yuri's migratory herd thing. I think that's a very good way of putting it.
The other thing I want to know, Leo, is I want to contact, let's say, John Borthwick at BetaWorks, who backed the original Twitter search engine and backed Bitly. And I think that there are going to be companies, if this thing does take off, the way we're going to know it takes off is people are going to start new companies. And I hope my son's one of them on top of this. And that's where we're going to know the win is.
Yeah.
If it really is a platform, if it truly is a platform for our identities and communication and social life across the web, then let's hope that Google is once again creating opportunities for a lot of growth.
I wonder, you know, I can see the value to a company like the New York Times that doesn't have a social component.
And then, of course, they do, but you're right, they don't.
Right. And, of course, they must have looked at Open Social, too, as that kind of promise. And this is really the delivering on that promise. I have to think that companies like Twitter and Facebook will see it more as a threat than as a promise. I'm not convinced that they're going to say, oh, great, wonderful, come on, let's all federate. Unless users really demand it. And I think a lot of users are not going to demand it. I think it took a long time for people to get used to the idea of Twitter at all. And now having become used to it, I think most people are just going to stop and say, that's it, I got it, I'm done. I don't think they see the need for open standards or federation I don't think silos bother them per se.
Well, you know, it does in terms of who they can contact and where. You know, to some extent you go to where.
But
your
if everybody's
are,
on Twitter that you want to talk to, then they don't see it as a silo.
Sure, but
yeah, but that's why my Facebook had
everyone's
had to open
on
up
AOL. This is kind of, in some ways, this is the replay of the the email wars of the early 90s, where it's like, oh, you can't email people on another system. What are you talking about?
Right.
Oh, you can, but it goes through. It gets much worse and turns into something that doesn't make sense. It's not as good as we can do here.
Right.
In some ways, you know, the attachments go away or something. And it took a while for the standards to actually make stuff propagate back and forth better.
This has been a great conversation. I hope it stimulates our audience. Well, of course, everybody who listens to this show probably immediately jumped on Buzz, but I hope it stimulates some people to maybe take a second look if they were initially put off by the volume of content. Don't follow me or Scoble or Jason if you want. If you want to avoid that, there are a lot of nice, quieter conversations
going on.
But as soon as you come up with, there needs to be a way to say, okay, these high traffic, high volume threads, let me put them somewhere aside or collapse them or something so that I can see the low volume threads as well. I'm very excited by it. I think it's a really cool new platform. Normally, we would be doing a tip and a number and a tool. Do you have? We won't do the tip, although I think. If you want a tip, and I bet you it would have been the tip that Gina would have given us, and I'm sure next week she'll have many Buzz tips. But, of course, the very first thing I did with Buzz is create a filter that filtered the Buzz content out of my inbox so that I don't see it. And I think if you are put off by the amount of traffic you're getting from Buzz, it's very simple. You just create a filter. The key to this is that it has the words label colon buzz is legal, even though Google will actually complain about it. So has the words label colon buzz. Google will then say, warning, filter searches containing label in or is criteria are not recommended as these criteria will never match incoming email, which is not true. Maybe we could get that removed for whoever's watching from the Gmail team. Maybe there's a reason for that. And then skip the inbox. And all of your buzzes will then go into the buzz. See, the thing it took me a long time to figure out is that what Gmail calls a filter is what I call a folder or a filter plus a folder. So it'll go into the label buzz, which now is where all my buzzes are. And I can read them then. So that's a little tip that I'm sure Gina would have passed along, and it does make your inbox a lot more manageable not to have.
I suspect Gina's right now getting ready to write the book on Buzz.
Yeah. I have to wonder if she's thinking, maybe I should have waited for Buzz. Do you have a number?
Leah, you should tell the mute trip tip. Tip two, just, you know, how you mute a thread.
Yeah. Now, of course, this will be much more useful when you have unmute. But if a thread is getting to you, let's say you really have seen quite enough of this week in Google thread, you can mute it by just clicking the down arrow to in the upper right hand corner and mute this post, and you won't see it anymore. Unfortunately, I don't know of a way to unmute it, so it's kind of gone forever.
I think you can search for it and then bring it back.
Okay, so if you can, so remember it. Then you can find it. Then you can unmute it.
You remember a magic word in it, yeah.
Yeah, remember some magic word, and then you can find it again. Yeah, that is a good tip, Yuri. And you haven't, maybe Yuri, you've probably used this more than anybody. You've been using this for over a year. You got a tip for us to make Buzz better?
Well, one thing that I noticed a lot of people don't know exists, which is just a kind of a general Gmail tip, is the keyboard shortcuts. For instance, the muting.
Oh, M works, yeah.
Is M, yeah. Just press M on the keyboard.
You have to have keyboard shortcuts turned on in your settings, but I forgot, that's a very good point. Much easier than the drop-down, just type M.
And then if you want to turn off Buzz completely, it's in the footer. There's turn off chat, turn off Buzz.
Ah.
Little tiny letters, but it is there. Turn off Buzz.
Are you sure you were?
I should turn off chat because every time I show the screen, I'm afraid people are going to start chatting with me. So it is. It's right down there. But now you can presumably turn it right back on at another time if you decide to come
back.
That's
right. Yeah. You can.
Okay. Good tips. A number, Mr. Jarvis.
All right. I'll sneak in a news item this way. Three numbers, 50,000, 500,000, and 1 gig. Google going to build 1 gig networks in towns. And I'm trying to figure out how to get my town to
me too.
March raid. We all are.
I'm going to the city council.
It's a way to get us geeks out of the woodwork and say, I didn't know you were a geek, neighbor.
Yeah.
But Google's going to build a 1 gig open, they say, network. And I think that's going to be incredibly magnificently disruptive to show what life in America could be. So at some point here, I'm going to have both a gig network to my home and a sauna. It'll be just like Finland.
Socialist! My new rallying cry is light the dark fiber.
That's, and we'll all know how much you're making.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, that's right.
It'll be online. Very good, good. I forgot to, you know, there is actually a lot of news. I just wanted to spend some time since we have Kevin and Yuri here to talk about Buzz, but you're absolutely right. That's a huge story and a very interesting story. Kevin, you want to comment on that at all? The gigabit Google?
Well, I think it's definitely an interesting move by them, and it's something that they want. What they've said. There was a good interview with Stacey Higginbottom at GigaOM about this, where they're saying, we're not trying to be the infrastructure provider. We're just trying to do a pilot to show what's possible and to debunk some of the things the incumbent carriers have said about, oh, this is impossible. It'll take us millions of years. And they say, okay, what is actually possible? Do some actual experiments on that. And yeah. Wearing my BT hat, I think it'd be great if BT could start running fiber in America the way it can run fiber in the UK.
Please, Kevin, come to New Jersey.
But at the moment, the model in the US is that monopolies are handed out, and they get to decide what they do and where.
Right.
So if we can disrupt that, that's great. I'd love, I've read about this five years ago or something, saying I would love to have access to the stuff out the back of my house along the fence where the things are running. I just want to run a bit of glass. There's no electricity running through it.
That's right.
Just run a fiber along there and plug it in the other end.
Yeah.
There's no fire hazard in a fiber. But being able to start from this end and run the fiber up would be great too, as well as running it down. And we need more connectivity for all these things we're using, and finding a way to do that is a great thing.
Just like to point out to civic fathers and mothers everywhere that a great way to get reelected would be to get Google to put gigabit fiber in your town. So maybe you ought to start preparing that. And I don't need to mention a tool. I think Buzz is the tool. If you haven't tried it, I think it's well worth trying. And we're going to certainly use it more and more on the network. I've got to play with all the interconnects, because I think it should be simple for this to pipe into friend feed so that we get both.
I think you should have a competition, Leo, to develop some kind of magnificent buzzy twig, et cetera, app.
Ah. Well, Chris Messina posted on Buzz just a minute ago, or actually posted on ClickSet just a minute ago. The Fluid app makes it possible on a Mac, and Chrome would do this on a Windows machine to have a Buzz application, just by making the Buzz page be a standalone app. You could do that with Fluid or with Chrome. That would be handy. But I bet we could make a Twit specific one. Kevin Marks, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me.
Ribbit.
Very interesting conversation.
Yeah, great. And ribbit.com. And of course, Kevin's a regular on another show on the Twit Network, which is rapidly becoming one of my favorites. It's called Tummel Vision. It's all about keeping the party going in social media. And you can listen to that or watch it on the Twit Network. What days is it? Is it Thursday you do that?
Thursday night at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern.
Yep. And I think we're quickly going to turn that into a podcast, because I just think it's among the smartest people and the best conversations I've heard on the net. Heather Golden does that with Heather Golden with you,
and Deb Schultz, yeah,
and Deb Schultz, that's right. And it was your idea, wasn't it? I think you came to me with it. Anyway,
I think the three of us got together and said we need to do this.
I love it
because with the concept is so important.
Yeah, yeah. I just love it. Yuri, it's so great to reconnect with you. I'm glad that you are now retired and living in Finland.
Growing forests.
That's great. Growing forests in Finland.
We need more of them. It's good.
Zengastrom.com is his website. You can read his posts, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot more from Yuri, founder of Jaiku, former Googler, and a great guy to have on.
A Googler, always a Googler.
Yeah, I know. This is the former Googler show. Thank you, Yuri.
This weekend, ex-Googlers.
Did Petri leave, or is he still at Google?
He's now a venture capitalist.
Oh, see, there you go.
He left as well.
I guess that non-compete ran out. All right. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.